Welcome to the Shirin of the Nezer of Parashios Vayakel Pukudei. I'll try to do first a passage from Ibn Ezra and Vayakel, and then to do one from Pukudei, just to cover all our bases. So Peklam is Ches, Pop the Ches, in describing the putting together of the Mishkan in its various parts, it says, Vayakel Pachiyar Nechoshes, Pachiyar Arvein, or Pachiyar, I should say, made the Kiyar, the basin, from which the Kohanim would wash their hands and feet. He made it out of Nechoshes, out of copper. The ace Kanon Nechoshes, he made his vase out of copper. The Maros Hatsovos, out of the mirrors of the women. The word Sovos, we'll see, is a difficult word to translate, but it's clearly feminine. It refers to the mirrors of the women. Asher Sovu Pesach Ohel Moed. The word sava, of course, means an army or a battalion, and the sense of sovos is women who would come together like an army or a group. So, again, a rough translation of the pasuk is that Moshe Rabbeinu or Bezalel used the mirrors of the gathering women who would gather at the entrance to the Ohel Moed. So the kiyar, the basin, was made out of mirrors. Why would the kiyar be made out of mirrors? So Rashi here quotes a Gemara from the Sefer Sota that these mirrors belong to Benos Yisrael Hayu B'Yodam Naros. The Jewish women had mirrors that they possessed. Yerolos Bohen Kishahen Mishkashtos. Right? They would use the mirrors as women do to look at themselves when they would get dressed up. Rashi writes, but of course the women wanted to bring these mirrors to donate them for the creation of the Mishkan. They wanted to give their mirrors. Moshe Rabbeinu said, well, I'm going to take women's mirrors to make into a part of the Mishkan. The mirror is meant to beautify oneself. It's an instrument, in a sense, of the Yetzirah, the evil inclination that's focused on materialism, that's focused on physicality, particularly women who are utilizing the mirror to beautify themselves. Oftentimes, they then go and do something which might be unseemly. How can I accept the mirrors? Amayla HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kabel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, accept the mirrors. Ki Elu Chaviv Olayim in HaKol. These mirrors are more precious to me than anything else. Al Yedein HaMiru HaNoshim Sivos Rabos B'Mitzrayim. The women in Egypt utilized these mirrors to create many, many children. That's where the word sava comes in, army. They made armies and armies of children, battalions and battalions of children, through these mirrors. How so? Rashi continues, Kishahayu ba'aleim yegeim ba'hodas perach. In Mitzrayim, when the husbands were worn out from all of the work that they had to do, Hayu holchos u'malichos v'hem machal u'mishtam achilos osam. The women would go out to the fields where the men were tired from all their work. They would bring them food, they would bring them drink. The notlos amaros, v'chol achos roa asmoim v'alo v'mara, v'shadlosso v'dvarim loma aninoim imcha, v'toch kach m'dios v'alim v'ekavim v'nishakos v'lohem. The women would take these mirrors, they would gaze with their husbands together in these mirrors, they would arouse the passion of their husbands, the men and the women would be intimate with one another, and that would lead ultimately to the creation of even more and more generations of Jewish children, thank you, who were born and who prospered in Egypt. And essentially the mirrors in the hands of these women were a sign that the Jewish people were not giving up, you know, despite the fact that we were broken under the shibud, under the slavery of Mitzrayim, and there was certainly a very strong inclination to say, this is it, we don't need more children, why should we bring more children into a world which is so terrible, which is so dismal and dark, you know, the way the world is now for us. No, they had a sense of hope, they had a sense of, you know, commitment to the future, and all of that is symbolized by these mirrors. What better thing to utilize for the Mishkan than the symbol of hope, which is the mirrors? Says the Gemara, goes even further than that. What was the usage of the kiyar? What was one of the usages of the kiyar, of the basin? Water was taken from there in the process of giving water to the sota, the woman who had been accused and suspected of infidelity. That whole process of the sota drinking water ultimately was meant to restore peace to a relationship between a husband and wife that had been strained with an accusation of infidelity. Here these women use these mirrors to bring peace between themselves and their husbands, to increase the love between themselves and their husbands. It seems only appropriate that the mirrors should be utilized for the kir, for the basin, part of the role of which was to bring shalom, to bring peace, and ish l'ishto between a husband and wife. All of this is Rashi quoting from the Gemara. Comes to Ibn Ezra, and he gives a very, very different interpretation. We'll see that Ibn Ezra, as is his wont, assumes that many of the interpretations, the Rabbinic interpretations of Chazal in particular, are not necessarily the simple pshat, the simple reading of the pasuk. Perhaps they represent a single opinion in the Gemara, but not the universal opinion. Comes to Ibn Ezra, he says as follows. Mishpa kol anoshim l'yakos liros tenei mechaboke b'maris v'chodes nechoshes l'zuchuchis l'sakim ha'ko'orim sha'al rasheim. Ibn Ezra tells you, in case you didn't know, the practice of women is to look in a mirror every morning. I think we still have that minute today. Could you even look in the mirror in the morning? But women look in the mirror in the morning, made out of copper, a very polished copper, or out of glass. He writes, and they fix themselves up. There were women amongst the Jewish people who served Hashem in such a pure and spiritual way. These women had given up the material pleasures and attractions of this world. And these women, who were so spiritual and removed from materialism, decided when the Mishkan was being built that they were going to donate their mirrors to the Mishkan. Why were they going to donate their mirrors to the Mishkan, says the Ibn Ezra? They were spiritual people. They didn't feel that need to go looking in the mirror every morning and, making sure that every single hair was in place the way it was supposed to be, making sure that, every aspect of their face was aligned the way it was supposed to be. They felt this draw towards spirituality. They didn't really crave the idea of looking in a mirror. Right? So therefore they said, we're going to give up our mirrors. We don't need the mirrors anymore. We're going to give the mirrors to the Mishkan, and we'll do without mirrors. She just notes that the usage of mirrors nowadays and the usage of mirrors then a days probably is a little bit different. Chazal, the Gemara says that men are not supposed to look into a mirror. Right? So the truth is that the general practice, why should men not look into a mirror? Only women look into mirrors. Men, that's not a proper, masculine thing to do, to look into a mirror. That's a degadisha in a sense, acting and dressing in a way which is more feminine. A real man wouldn't look into a mirror. The practice nowadays is that plenty of men look into mirrors. It's considered much more common to look into mirrors, not to spend time beautifying oneself, but just to look presentable. I think modern-day society, looking to a mirror is associated just with looking presentable as opposed to, beautifying oneself above and beyond, in an excessive fashion. But in the time of the Tanakh, in the time of Chazal, looking into a mirror was not something which was associated with being presentable, right? Because again, men are supposed to look presentable also, but the assumption was that men would not be looking into a mirror. And women would look into mirrors to the extent to which they were looking to be not just presentable, but excessively beautiful. These women said, you don't need to look excessively beautiful, we'll just look presentable, and therefore we can take the mirrors and donate them to the Mishkan. So what would these women do? Rakbos yom yom, el tefach ha'olel moed lehispawel, v'lishmoa divrei ha'mitzvos. These women who had embraced an incredibly spiritual life and were not interested in the materialism associated with mirrors would congregate every day around the Mishkan lehispalel, to daven, and to hear the elucidation of the mitzvot. Again, apparently, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu or perhaps others were given teaching sessions. They were given shiur in the vicinity of the Mishkan. These women wanted Torah. These women wanted Tefillah. These women were not interested in the materialism of mirrors. Here, let the Mishkan take my mirrors. I want to come and hear Torah. I want to come and be mispalel to daven in the environs of the Mishkan. Right. So, just in terms of the explanation of the pasuk, right, the mirrors are described as the maros hatsovos, the mirrors of the women who congregated, asher tzavu pesach ol moed, who congregated at the entrance to the ol moed. So Ibn Ezra's chat reads very, very nicely into the words of the pasuk. We assume that there were these women who came and congregated to daven and to be instructed in terms of the mitzvah, and it was these women who were immensely spiritual who donated their mirrors to the usage of the Mishkan, because they said we simply have no need for them anymore.
Didn't they donate them at the beginning of the Mishkan built? Just for the purpose of the Mishkan.
Okay. So why should that make a difference, though? And as if they gave them before the Mishkan was actually built, you know. So I guess, you know, the way you would understand it is the Salos. In other words, they gave their mirrors before there was an Ohel Moed to congregate at, but it was those same types of women who had given up their mirrors who were naturally disposed to spirituality in such a way so that when the Mishkan was built, they were the first ones there every morning to daven and to, you know, be involved in, you know, hearing words of Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu from others. Ramban quotes this this explanation of the Ibn Ezra, and he points out that it would seem that the Targum Onkelos interprets the pasuk in a similar fashion as well. The Onkelos writes, the Avar Yaskiyara Dinafasha, Yaskisisei Dinafasha, that he made the kior and its base out of copper, the Makliyas Nishaira, with the mirrors of the women, the Asyon with Salah, who came to daven, to Shra Mashkan Zimna, at the entrance to the Ohel Moed. Where did Targum Onkelos get this idea that the women came to daven? So the Ramban, in a short, truncated fashion, the Targum Onkelos is essentially reflecting the same chat which is given by the Ibn Ezra. These are highly spiritual women who were giving up their mirrors. They were giving up their physicality, their materialism. They wanted to focus on that which was spiritual, and these were women of incredibly high caliber from that respect. The Ibn Ezra's chat is echoed by the Chizkuni, by the Sfarno, and a lot of what we call the Pashtonim, you know, the Mefarshim HaKumash, who take more of a chat approach in trying to understand what's going on over here. If it ever continues, the Zelah should solve the Pesach Oel Moed, Kihoi Rabos, there were many such women. And then he writes, so Hizkir Akosos Midat Hakiyor, Hashem Hizkir Midat Hakiyor and Shaosha Shlomo, Rakinas the Bechor Amaros Sheviyu. It's interesting to note that the Torah never delineates how big the kior had to be, how big the basin had to be. We find with regard to the other clay on Mishkan, the other utensils of the other vessels of the Mishkan, that were generally given measurements as to how big they were supposed to be exactly. It doesn't say anything about how big the kior had to be. And says that Ibn Ezra, that's by design, because there was no set size for the kior. The kior was made from the mirrors of these women. So the plan was, as many mirrors as we have, that's how big the kior is going to be. If there would have been more mirrors, it would be a bigger kior. If there would be fewer mirrors, it would be a smaller kior. There wasn't an absolute requirement, you know, in terms of size of the kior. Whatever was donated in terms of mirrors, that's what was transformed into the kior. It's a very, very, you know, interesting explanation. One can ask the question on the Ibn Ezra. So why, of all things, were the maros transformed into the kior? Right? I mean, according to Rashi's explanation, there was a real connection between the mirrors and the kior. The mirrors were meant, in Rashi's quotation from the Gemara, to restore shalom between a husband and a wife, And the kiyur was meant to restore shalom between a husband and wife. So there's a certain logic to making the kiyur out of the mirrors. But if the women were looking to, in Ezra's approach, that the women were looking to give their mirrors, you know, they were looking to give up their mirrors because they were essentially saying, we don't need them. We're spiritual. We don't need this, you know, this excessive focus on physicality and appearance and the like. I don't know. So that's a very beautiful idea. Why Davka should the kiyur be the recipient of these mirrors from the Ibn Ezra's perspective? So again, so this next suggestion is perhaps homiletic. If you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, you don't like it. You know, can't blame it. You can blame it on me. You can't blame it on the Ibn Ezra if you don't like it. But you know, perhaps one can suggest as follows: the kiyur is that kli, is that vessel which readies the kohen to be able to perform the avodah. In other words, in a sense, it's a preparatory vessel. All of the other vessels are part of the avodah itself. The kiyur is the preparation for the avodah. The kohen has to wash his hands and feet before he can do the avodah. Otherwise, he's invalidated from being able to do the avodah. Perhaps, according to the Ibn Ezra, the message of the kiyur being made from these mirrors of the women is that the preparation for avodah, you know, the first step even before we get to service of Hashem, is to take this attitude of not focusing on the material and the physical and wanting to devote oneself to the spiritual. That's the first step towards being able to engage in avodah. If a person comes in to avodah Hashem but is still mired in the physical, you know, hasn't been able to separate himself from materialism, from an obsession with looks and appearances and things like that, you know, so they're not going to get that far in avodah Hashem. The prerequisite to avodah Hashem is to give up the mirrors. You know, the kiyur, which represents, let's get started with avodah Hashem, starts when we make this decision, again, you know, whether literally or figuratively, let's give up the mirrors, let's give up the focus on physicality and materialism, and just, you know, embrace that, which is the focus on spirituality. I can't help but add an editorial note, and again, if you like this, you like this, if you don't like this, you don't like this. Unfortunately, even in our frum circles, when it comes to dating in particular, there is such an emphasis on physicality and appearances, and it plagues all sectors of the Orthodox community. And, you know, okay, it's true. Chazal say that a man is supposed to be physically attracted to his wife. That's true, right? Also, others, Shikadish Isha Ashiyarena, a man has to see his wife at least once before they get betrothed to one another, you know, maybe even more than once it could be, right? Because otherwise, you know, he might look at her under the chuppah and say, really? no way, no how, you know, where's the exit door? No, I'm backing out. Right? Okay, so you have to be attracted to your wife. That's true. But, you know, the obsession with appearances, with looks, The notion, which, again, it's part of the world today, but it continues to shock me, that we have to have shidduch resumes with pictures attached to them, you know, because you have to see exactly what you're getting into, you know. I mean, I wouldn't even agree to a first date unless I, you know, saw what it is that, you know, that I might potentially marry. All of that is just the antithesis of what the Ibn Ezra is trying to bring out over here. The Ibn Ezra is saying, you know, these women who are held up to be an example are women who said, you know, again, we'll be presentable, but we don't care so much about the appearances. We're going to take our mirrors, we're going to donate them to the Mishkan, and we're going to come and we're going to daven, and we're going to come and we're going to hear mitzvahs, you know, we're going to come to Shiurim at the entrance to the Olal Moed. One almost gets the impression, unfortunately, in our own day and age, if women were to do that sort of thing, they would be quickly called into a back room with shachanim and told, what's wrong with you? You'll never get married that way. Right? First of all, it's happening. Coming and listening to shiurim, and you're not even trying to look pretty, you know, with your mirror. What do you think is going to happen to you? How are you going to find a husband under those circumstances? There's something amiss when, you know, the lesson of the lesson, again, you know, obviously everybody has to try to be presentable and put together, and yes, you know, there's more physicality and attraction and looks all together is not a healthy thing either, you know, for the average person, but the obsession, you know, with looks and physicality and the like is really, it's really the antithesis of everything that Ibn Ezra, I think, is trying to teach. Here in the Pasuk, you know, maybe we should make Parshas Vayakol for Kudei the annual, you know, date the person for who they are and not for what they look like Shabbos. You know, that shouldn't be the focus, you know, of what Shidduchim is supposed to be all of that. That's an editorial note. Again, you can take that or leave that if you wish.
Whatever happened to the deep meaning of conversation as part of the
Yeah. No, I mean, again, you know, clearly what the Ezra is telling us is that, you know, what makes a woman or a man or a woman, for that matter, special is not what that person looks like. It's that devotion to davening and to, you know, wanting to do the Divine Hashem. Unfortunately, sometimes that really gets lost in the shuffle.
You're looking for further argument. You think that of all the days of the week, that people might be most concerned about their appearance, well, that might be the day that they're going out to shul.
Right, 100%. You know, that there's a certain irony in the fact that shul could be transformed into a fashion show also, 100%. Again, everything has to be with a measure. Obviously, people are supposed to look put together, you know, they're not supposed to look disheveled, you know, people are supposed to best foot forward. I mean, all these things are true. But the question is, what's the emphasis, and, you know, what is, you know, what do we consider to be the main thing, and what do we consider to be, you know, what's the ikar, what's the tafel, you know, what's the focus, and what's, you know, what's secondary. Sometimes we've lost sight of that. Maybe not just sometimes, but oftentimes we've lost sight of that, you know, in society today. So Ibn Ezra is a good reminder, you know, to put the focus where the focus is supposed to be. As I said, after Meiriv, we'll learn together Ibn Ezra from Parshas Pekudei, and we'll pick up at that time. Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Rafa. Welcome to the second half of the Shirin Ibn Ezra, Parshas Vayakel Pekudei. We saw the first half, Ibn Ezra, Parshas Vayakel, and this time around we'll see Ibn Ezra and Parshas Pekudei. So, in the very beginning of Perek Mem, it says, Vaygavar Hashem Moshe Leymar, Hashem says to Moshe, V'yom HaKodesh HaRishon, the Echad LaKodesh, on the first day of the first month, in other words, Aleph Nisan, the first day of Nisan, Tokim es Mishkan Oel Moed. You should erect the tent of the Oel Moed. Right? In other words, the Oel Moed, the Mishkan is supposed to be erected on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So the Ezra writes as follows. It's involved in a chronological issue, and also tangentially ends up touching on a number of issues where the Ibn Ezra gives a somewhat different perspective than one we might be used to in terms of a number of calendar-related issues. Machlokesi, v'yesh omrim ki yom ha-shmini l'miluim hoya rosh chodesh nisa. Right, we know that the Torah describes how there were 7 days of miluim, 7 days during which the Moshe Rabbeinu was serving in the Mishkan, and the Kohanim were, so to speak, being broken in. In other words, they were being consecrated to serve in their future role as Kohanim in the Mishkan. Some say, Rashi brings this, the Seder Olam, one of the authoritative chronicles of Jewish history, says this way, this is the way we generally assume, is that the Miluim took place, the 7 days of Miluim took place during the last week of Adar, in other words, now, right, this time of year, and they culminated the 8th day after the Miluim was the first day of Nisan. Right? In other words, when Parshas Shmini opens up, Yom HaShmini came to pass on the 8th day, you know, and that was the day on which the Mishkan was actually inaugurated, that day was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So in other words, when the Pasuk over here says that the Mishkan should be erected on the first day of Nisan, it's referring to the 8th day of the Miluim, the beginning of Parshas Shmini. The Hutzuchu Lomar, according to that calculation of things, one has to say, He disclosed to the Esther Adar, Hakim, Moshe, Samishkam. And Moshe Rabbeinu actually erected the Mishkan for the first time on the 23rd of Adar, in other words, during that, you know, a week before the Chodesh Nisan, this time of year. V'nei Yom Chilas HaMiluim HaYomoshe Sosro Ubona LaHargil HaKohan. According to this way of understanding, which is, again, all of the Midrashim, so Moshe Rabbeinu would erect and demolish the Mishkan daily during the Shivat Yomei Miluim, during the 7 days of the Niluim, you know, every day during that last week of Adar, in order to show the Kohanim how it's done and to get them into the practice of appreciating how to dismantle and put the Mishkan back together. The Amru, and this opinion of Chazal also says, Ki Asoyer Shidorash Moshe Vinei Sorah, that when we fast well with the Parsha Shmini, and we find that after the deaths of Nadav and Avihu, Moshe Rabbeinu called for a certain carbon, a sa'ir, a goat that had been offered up as a carbon, and the anticipation was that the Kohanim would eat it. And Moshe Rabbeinu found that that sa'ir, that goat, had been totally burnt, right? That the Kohanim refused to eat any part of it. Because as Moshe explained, we're owning him. You know, Moshe had just lost his sons. Elazar and Itamar had just lost their brothers. Right? Yochalti chakos hayom. How could we eat this carbon, which is the carbon chaptos? Hayita de'e Hashem, an onen is not allowed to eat for the carbonos, so we shouldn't be eating this sa'ir, the meat of this carbon. What was that carbon that was burned? So Chazal say, who sa'ir rosh chodesh. Right? That was the sa'ir, which is offered up as the carbon chaptos on every rosh chodesh, which, again, the chronology works out. The 8th day of the Miluim was the Chodesh Nisan, right? That was the day on which Nadav and Avihu brought their Eish Zara, and they were killed as a result. And it was on that day that the Sa'ir of Chodesh was being offered up and was burned by Aaron and his sons, you know, initially to the dismay of Moshe Rabbeinu, and ultimately Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Chumash tells us, was convinced that they did the right thing. So Ibn Ezra, that's all, you know, one approach to Chazal in understanding the chronology. However, says the Ibn Ezra, that's not the only approach. The name of Sonu B'Sifri, Ki Mishael V'El Tzofon, Hayu Hatzneim L'Nefesh Ozo. Right? The Sifri brings, and the truth is not just the Sifri, the Gemara, Sukkot Daf Chofei Amadala, Chofei Amadala, quotes the Tana Reb Akiva, that when in Parshas Valoska, a group of people approach Moshe Rabbeinu and say, we are Tomei, and therefore unable to bring the Korban Pesach on Yud Dalet Nisan, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu, as a result, reveals to the people the dinim of Pesach Sheni. Somebody who was Tomei by Pesach Rishon is entitled to bring a Pesach Sheni. Who were these Tomeim? Who were these people who had come into contact with a dead body? So one opinion, again, the opinion of Rabbi Akiva is that they were Mishael V'El Tzofon, right? The ones who had taken care of the bodies of Nadav and Avihu after their deaths. They had become Tomei, and they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, we are Tomei, so therefore unable to offer up the Korban Pesach on your Dalet Nisan. Now wait a minute, says the Ibn Ezra. Let's just think through this through for a minute. If the Mishkan was erected on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, like Aleph Nisan, and Nadav and Avihu died on Aleph Nisan, and Mishael V'El Tzofon handled their bodies on Aleph Nisan, why was it a problem for them to become Tahor by Yudalit Nisan? Somebody who's Tahor Neis needs a week of purification. Right? Yes, Adzoach Mechatos, you know, the water mixed with the ashes of the Paradum are sprinkled on him, but that's a week-long process, right? They should have been able to have been tahor by the 8th of Nisan. Maybe the 9th of Nisan, I don't know, the extra day. Right? But sort of by the 14th of Nisan, they should have been tahor already, right? So what's going on over there? So it would seem, according to that, the Hinei Yom Shmini Lemiluim, who Shmini Lachodesh. suggests to Ibn Ezra, in light of that opinion, it would seem that that opinion, at least in Chazal, has a different chronology of what's going on over here. Let's imagine that the Miluim, the 7 days of Miluim, began not on the 23rd of Adar, culminating on the 1st of Nisan. Well, let's imagine that they began on the 1st of Nisan. The 8th day, the Yom HaShmini, was Ches Nisan, the 8th of Nisan. That was the day on which Nadav and Abihu died. And in light of that, you know, that's mamash just, less than a week before Erev Pesach, before the bringing of the Korban Pesach. In light of that, we can understand why Mishael and Telitzofon, you know, were Tomei Meis, and therefore were not able to bring the Korban Pesach Mishael. It's all working on the assumption that the Miluim began on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the deaths of Nadav and Abihu, the Yom HaShmini, that 8th day, was the 8th of Nisan, not the 1st of Nisan, as is the more conventional chronology. The truth is, if you look in the Gemara and Sukkah, so the Gemara and Sukkah brings three different opinions, Kotel Braisa brings three different opinions. Who were the Tznei and Lenefesh Adam, who were the people who were unable to bring the Korban Pesach Rishon because of the fact that they were Tamei Neis, right? One opinion is that it was the people who were involved in carrying the Aron of Yosef. The second opinion is that it was the Mishael and Elzalfam. And Rabbi Yitzchak is quoted in the Braisa as rejecting both opinions because he says in both cases they had time to become Tahar before Erev Pesach. So what was the problem? In other words, the point that Ibn Ezra is raising over here is essentially the Tana, Rabbi Yitzchak's Tana against Rabbi Akiva. How can you say that as Mishael and Elzalfam, right, that the chronology doesn't work out? Mishael and Elzalfam, you know, became Tomei on Aleph Nisan, and it should have been a cinch for them to become Tahar by Yudalit Nisan. After the Yitzchak suggests it was people who came into contact with the Neis Mitzvah. It's a different story. Okay. So, Rabbi Akiva could, Rabbi Akiva was, Gal Adar, right? He certainly had the ability to figure out that if somebody became Tomei on Aleph Nisan, it was enough time to become Tahar by Yudalit Nisan. So what would Rabbi Akiva respond to Rabbi Yitzchak's complaint against him? So apparently the Ibn Ezra holds that the Machlokas, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yitzchak, is this Machlokas. They're arguing over an issue of chronology. Rabbi Akiva holds that the Mishkan was erected on the 8th of Nisan. The 1st of Nisan was the beginning of the Miluim, right? L'chora Rabbi Akiva would not omit Tachnun from davening during the last week of Adar, right? Probably wouldn't omit Tachnun from davening the last week of Adar anyway, even if he held that the Yimei HaMiluim were the last week of Adar. But certainly Rabbi Akiva holds that the Yimei HaMiluim are the first 7 days of Nisan. The deaths of Nadav and Abihu took place on Ches Nisan. The Sa'ir that was burned has nothing to do with the Sa'ir of Rosh Chodesh. That was a different Karban. It never says in the Pasuk that it was the Sa'ir of Rosh Chodesh. And we understand why Mishael and Elzalfon were not able to become Tahar by Yudalit Nisan. Right? So the Ezra posits that this whole issue of the chronology is actually a machlokes hatanoim. It goes back that far in trying to understand what was going on over here. Where did the Nesiim fit into this? So it continues to Ibn Ezra. So we know that the Nesiim brought 12 days worth of karbanos. When did that start? So he writes, I'm going to skip through a little bit because it's a long Ibn Ezra, but we'll try to pick out some of the salient points. Towards the end of the Ibn Ezra, he writes, V'hinei nishlomo chanukah samizbeach achar tisha osar yom v'chodesh harisha. Right? So according to the Ibn Ezra, the first of the karbanos of the Nesiim was on the 8th of Nisan. Yehuda brought his carbon on the 8th of Nisan, not on Aleph Nisan, as I think is the more common way of assuming. And the Nesiim brought their carbonos through Pesach. They brought their carbonos through the 19th day of Nisan. There were 12 days of carbonos commencing with Ches Nisan. And that is, okay, if that's interesting, right, that the Nesiim brought their carbonos through through Pesach, but it gets even more interesting. The Al Tosim El Limcha Divrei Hatzoim, and don't be bothered by the question, says the Ibn Ezra. If that's the case, Masai Asa Karbanos Achad. So what happened to the Karbanos of Pesach? Here they are bringing the Karbanos of the Nisim. So what happened to the Karbanos of Pesach itself, besides the Karban Pesach? The Karban Pesach is an Arer of Pesach. What about the Karbanos of Musaf that is supposed to be brought, every day during the Yom Tov of Pesach itself? No, don't be bothered by that. Ki Yisrael also the Midbar Sinai, Rak Chag HaPesach Laila Echa. When the Jews were in the Midbar, Pesach was one day long. Pesach was one day long. What? What's that? Pesach was one day long. They brought the carbon Pesach on Yudalid, and they celebrated on Pesach. So lo shomru chag hamatzos. They didn't observe a 7-day holiday called chag hamatzos. And says to Ibn Ezra, you're asking, where do I get off saying such a thing? It's a pretty big finish. Can you imagine if all the hotels would only operate for one day? They try to jack up the price, 7 times, right? He came kosel. This is a fairish of parcel, says the Ibn Ezra. What, he gave me a hard time? The Hayok Yaviach HaShem, turn back to the end of Pasha's bow when the Jews are leaving the Mitzrayim. It says, the Hayok Yaviach HaShem, where it's like, Nani, when I come to Baruch Hu brings you into Eretz Yisrael, the Shomaitos, the Chukazos, you should guard this. Shivach Yomim Tol Chamatzos. You should eat matzos for 7 days. Meaning, says Ibn Ezra, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, Pesach was going to be a 7-day holiday. But from the time that the Jews left Mitzrayim throughout the time they were in the Midbar, Pesach was a 1-day affair, and that was it. They brought the carbon Pesach on Yudalim. They ate it on the night of Tetzvah, right? Which is, by the way, what they did in Mitzrayim, right? They were just reenacting what they had done in Mitzrayim. They didn't stick around in Egypt for a 7-day holiday, right? So the idea of Pesach, morphing into a 7-day holiday, according to Ibn Ezra, was something that was reserved for when the Jews would go into Eretz Yisrael. Who pierced the Hayah Hayom Asel Ochem Zikaron? Well, the pasuk over there says this day should be a remembrance for you. It means L'dor Haba Achareichem L'chba Hayom Seischem Mikra Kodesh Ki Hayom Hayom Arishon Nosu Mikoshem. Right? And it was only this day should be a memorial for you in the future, for the next generation. Then he adds something which, if you recall, is very reminiscent of a comment we had a few weeks ago where the Ibn Ezra spoke about the fact that, by and large, they did not bring karbanos in the Midbar. The Ibn Ezra made this point in Parshas Tetzave, that the carbon talmud was only brought as long as the Jews were encamped at Midbar Sinai. They did not bring the carbon talmud throughout the rest of the time they were in the Midbar. Again, the Ibn Ezra is picking up on a sheet on Tanoim from the Sechus Hanigo, which he considers to be normative. He writes, the Od, Ki b'Midbar Sinai Elohem Lechem Shiyasu Nasos Shivat Yomim. It wouldn't be shy, he says, to be able to have a 7-day celebration of Pesach in the Midbar, because they didn't have enough grain to make 7 days worth of Nasos for the millions of people who were Klal Yisrael. They were sustained off of mum. They didn't have master bakeries or anything like that. Afo pishen shayu krovim ha'yishuv zavar gadol ha'yam shemotu lechem lachos lechol al-morom al-pesach laylo ki am rav ha'yam me'od. It was enough of a challenge to make masters for the one night of the Seder. Right? That was a huge challenge to be able to make masters for the one night of the Seder. To imagine that they would have to make masses for the entire 7 days of Pesach, it would be beyond the capabilities of what they were able to do in the Midbar. Now, so you'll ask me, wait a minute. Well, we all know you don't have to eat masses for 7 days, right? The mum, to the best of our knowledge, was not chomistic, right? As far as we know, right? So, so let them eat mum, right? As one of the French monarchs once said in a somewhat different context, right? Let them eat mum, for 7 days. Why do they have to eat masses? Right? So the Ibn Ezra is consistent with something which he says earlier in Sefer Shmos. The Ibn Ezra holds Shiva Shem Tocha Masses. The simple pshat is that there's some kind of mitzvah to eat matzahs for all 7 days. That's found in other Rishonim as well. We know that the Gra made a point, he felt that it was a mitzvah kiyumis, a fulfillment of the mitzvah to eat matzah throughout Pesach, and we make a bracha b'alachilas matzah throughout Pesach because of the fulfillment, the mitzvah kiyumis, of eating matzah throughout the days of Pesach. Ibn Ezra holds that way, because Kuni later on holds that way. So, in addition to saying Hamotzi, right? In other words, it's a Birchas HaMitzvah, right? We not only say the Birchas HaNemen, we say the Birchas HaMitzvah as well, like we do on the night of the Seder. He did throughout Pesach. Right. In other words, there's a Kiyum HaMitzvah to eat matzah throughout the 7 days. So the Ibn Ezra, consistent with this idea that he holds, that there's a mitzvah to have matzah, you know, throughout the days of Pesach, says it's inconceivable. It's so essential to Pesach to eat matzah, that it's inconceivable that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give up a holiday of Pesach without giving up the wherewithal to eat matzah throughout the 7 days. Again, you can definitely look at it from a different perspective, but that's where the Ibn Ezra is coming from. The importance of eating matzah is the mitzvah kiyumis, at the very least, you know, throughout the days of Matzah, throughout the days of Pesach. So, he then raises an interesting question, which again is just a bursting of a bubble. I mean, everything that we've done so far to Ibn Ezra is to take things that we all knew were true and to tell you a totally different perspective. Everybody knows that, you know, the day on which the Mishkan was dedicated was Aleph Nisan. No, Shitin Tanayin was Ches Nisan, right? Everybody knows that Pesach, you know, from the get-go was a 7-day holiday. No! It's a 1-day holiday throughout all the time they were in the Midbar. So it became a 7-day holiday after Ibn Ezra once they came into Eretz Yisrael. So once we're bursting everybody's bubbles, let's burst another bubble, says Ibn Ezra. Not that he's looking to burst bubbles, but definitely coming with a unique perspective. Let me ask you, says Ibn Ezra, when the Nisim brought their karbanos, did they bring their karbanos on Shabbos? Now, Chazal's answer to this is yes. Yes, they brought their karbanos on Shabbos. But the Ibn Ezra, interestingly, brings that it's not, in his view, it's not so poshut. What would happen on Shabbos when they were dedicated in this? Did a Nasi bring his karban on Shabbos? Yesh Omrim, Hayu Medalgim. So he doesn't identify whom, but he says there are those who say that they would skip Shabbos. In other words, when it says Bayom HaRishon, Bayom HaSheni, Bayom HaShlishi, it doesn't mean the first, second, third days consecutively. It means the first, second, third days of bringing Karbanos. But there were 12 days of bringing Karbanos. There was at least one Shabbos in there, right? At least one Shabbos in there. So that Shabbos was skipped over, according to this opinion. So in other words, the 12 days were actually really 13 days, or maybe, depending on how it came out, 14 days, right? Because there was at least one Shabbos, maybe two Shabbos, in the course of those 12 days. You know, the first day, the second day, the third day, etc. means the first day of bringing Karbanos. He then brings a dissenting opinion, but, you know, based on his first opinion that, you know, the Nisim skipped the day of Shabbos, he then goes on to say a similar thing about two other incidences in Tanakh, which are very, very interesting. The Jews come into Eretz Yisrael under Yahushua. They march around Yericho for 7 days. Right? L'chora, what they did in terms of marching around Yericho would involve Chilul Shabbos. You know, marching around Yericho, blowing shofars, you know. L'chora, that's Chilul Shabbos. Did they march around Yericho on Shabbos? Right. So the traditional answer, again, is, as far as we knew up till now, the only answer given by Chazal is not only did they march around on Shabbos, but the seventh day was Shabbos. I think Rashi brings in Sefer Yehoshua that the seventh day was Shabbos. Right? That was Shabbos. Yericho fell on Shabbos. Zachary Ibn Ezra? No. According to the first opinion that the Nisim didn't bring their karbanos on Shabbos, so Yericho also, they took a breather on Shabbos. So how many days did it take them to walk around Yericho? 8 days. Because it's 7 days of actually walking around, but one of the days was a vacation day. One of the, on Shabbos, They didn't actually walk around. So when it says that the wall fell on the seventh day, it means the seventh day, but not the seventh contiguous day, the seventh day of their walking around. That's, you know, definitely a different perspective. But then consider the following. This is really, you know, this is really, it's mind-blowing, but it might be shocked. The Pasuk tells us in the beginning, the Pasuk tells us in Sefer Melachim, Perek Ches in Melachim Aleph, that the Jews, when they were mechanech the Beit HaMikdash, when they dedicated the Beit HaMikdash, they dedicated the Beit HaMikdash in Tishrei, and they celebrated for 7 days prior to Sukkot. Then they had the 7 days of Sukkot, and then finally, Bayom HaShmini, Shilach HaSa'am, and Shmini HaSeres, Shalom HaMalaf said, okay, it's enough, you can go home already. Alright, so if you make the cheshbon, right, so they were celebrating straight for 7 days prior to Sukkot. What happened to Yom Kippur? So the Gemara in Ma'akotah says, they ate on Yom Kippur, they didn't observe Yom Kippur that year. What was the right not to observe Yom Kippur? The Gemara talks about it. Shlomo HaMelech asked him that they should eat on Yom Kippur, because that was the simcha of the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, was such that it even overrode Yom Kippur. The people weren't sure. A bas kol came out and it vindicated the people. Fine, all of that. Zakti ibn Ezra, no. That's not what the pasuk means. But it says that they celebrated for 7 days prior to Sukkot. It means 7 days exclusive of Yom Kippur. Because, of course, they weren't going to eat on Yom Kippur. So, in other words, there were 7 days. They took a break in the middle of the 7 days to observe Yom Kippur. And then they went back to the festivities. What's that? Oh, okay. So, again, this goes back to the Mahalach of the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra is not shy to argue with Gemara's in these circumstances. Perhaps, again, it's not clear what he does with this specific Gemara, because he doesn't reference the Gemara in Ma'akotah, but perhaps based on the way he was explaining earlier, where he said that the Gemara's statement, the statement in the Sefer Olam, that the Chanukah San Nisan took place on Aleph Nisan, is actually a Machlokes Tanoim. So perhaps the Ibn Ezra understood that Gemara in Ma'akotah is also reflecting, you know, one Shita in Tanoim Amoraim, but that, you know, there are other shittas that disagree. In other words, you see over here a mahalach, a certain approach that the Ibn Ezra had, which is very different to the Bali Atosus. The Bali Atosus found two, three different Gemaras that said two, three different things, and they tried to reconcile them together. Another approach in Rishonim, like the Ibn Ezra, is to say, no, you know, a Gemara might reflect a certain opinion, but, you know, there might be other opinions that disagree, and we're not necessarily trying to reconcile everybody. In other words, to increase machlokas rather than try to consolidate machlokas. So I would imagine that Ibn Ezra, if he was asked about the Gemara in Ma'akotah, would say, that's a das yachid. He says in other cases, that's a das yachid. That's an individual's opinion. And we don't all like that. The simple pshat in the psukim is that, of course, they kept Yom Kippur. And the Shivat Yom, the 7 days that they observed prior to Sukkot, means really 8 days. It was, you know, 8 contiguous days. Right, but and Shabbos is also a Shabbos involved. It's just not Hilul Shvi'ah, so, you know, make a party, make a kiddush on Shabbos, you know, it's not a problem, right? But the Shabbos is with regard to Yom Kippur. So he would say, no, this was 8 days. It was 8 contiguous days, and one of the days was Yom Kippur, which they didn't observe. So that's what the Pasuk means by 7 days. Right? Again, a fascinating, very unconventional explanation, but might be, from a Pshat perspective, the simplest explanation. Somebody opens up the Navi and says, ah, what happened to Yom Kippur? So the Ezra's answer is, what do you mean what happened to Yom Kippur? You know, there's no Yom Kippur. It's just it doesn't bother telling you that, you know, in the Pesukim.
The team didn't bring the Kabbalah on Shabbos, they bring the Yom Kippur. It's the same thing, no?
Maybe, unless you say, I think the Ibn Ezra would say, there was no Yom Tov at that
point. There was only one day Yom Tov.
Right, there was only one day Yom Tov. So in other words, okay, maybe Tesvav they took a break. Maybe Tesvav they took a break, right? But,
there's no problem because it wasn't Yom Tov.
Right, but it wasn't Yom Tov. And that's probably why you have to stress that point, because otherwise you're right, there'd be a seven-day break, you know, in the middle of that. Right.
they were allowed to come in, that
yeah. Well, no, yeah, but that's not chametz. That's not chametz, though. In other words, well, you know, they baked it before it had a chance to be matnas. The insistence on 18 minutes. Eventually, yeah. I mean, you know, all other kabbalists are, you know, baked or fried or something is done with that. The 18 minutes, by the way, is only the rabban. So the raita, so it really has to ferment in order for it to become chametz.
Right.
Yeah, would it ferment with the oil? I imagine it would ferment with the oil, no? Right. Yeah, obviously made potatoes. Right, but still, in other words, the care that we take not to let it be machmas, you know, within the 18 minutes, all that's all dinim de rabbanim. In other words, with the raisa, these were baked or fried or, you know, they're processed in some way or another.
And then you're right,
yeah, yeah. Again, I'm not suggesting we should do that, but yeah, I'm saying that you know, the din of 18 minutes is the derabbanan.
How much people to rebel and do this
So again, I don't, you know, we
must have a story then.
Right.
I don't think this is right.
I think one thing that the Ibn Ezra stresses in his Hakama is that all he's willing to do is different than Chazal is to give interpretations that don't bear on Halacha. Now, when it comes to Halacha, he's very, very strong. That if Chazal says something, it's the Kabbalah, and we have to accept it. Right. That's not halacha l'maisa. In other words, that's a, you know. No, because again, he's saying, look at the Psukim. The Psukim say when you come into Eretz Yisrael, it becomes 7 days. Okay, but we know that that's halachically incorrect. Meaning the Ezra is working with the Gemaras and the Shulchan, you know, not the Shulchan Aruch, but with the accepted halacha, you know, the way it was understood at his time. You know, so he doesn't deny any of that. All he feels that he has the latitude to do is interpret the Psukim, and again, fascinatingly, over here, he's quoting others. Again, he doesn't make it clear who these others are, but it's pretty clear, at least in the first case, where he talks about, you know, the Hakamas HaMishkan, that he views this as a machlokes hatanoim, right? Now, he's not just coming along by himself and saying this. He's saying, it seems to me that there's machlokes within the Gemara on this point. You know, it's just that the average person doesn't discern that there's a machlokes over here.
Right.
It's Torah. In other words, according
to on their own and say that, you know what, if you could do this and say this, I think you're very good as well, you know.
Yeah.
Not
so bad to think that on your own.
Right. On a certain day that because you feel right because of their own taking.
Well, so the truth is, somebody who's entitled to make this day halacha does exactly that. I mean, you know, he's not rendering a psak. He's giving a pirush. In other words, he's saying, you know, that the pasuk, you know, would seem to be understood in such a fashion, right? And again, you know, is that a healthy thing? I think the Ibn Ezra would probably tell you, yeah, because you know, part of Torah is to try to understand it to the best of your ability. So if this is the best of my ability to understand Torah, this is good. You know, this is Talmud Torah. This, you know, can't be faulted, right? Well, he would not tell you that it's the majority. Meaning, again, you know, it's so interesting because again, we've been told so many times that this is the right way, this is the right way, this is the right way, so we become convinced, you know, that it's the majority. If it has to tell you, I don't think that's the majority, right? Again, having a different perspective is sometimes healthy, because it's, most of the time it's healthy, because it forces you to think long and hard about really trying to understand the Sukkim and the Sugyas and the like, you know, and not just, you know, not just parrot over what everyone has learned, you know, without really thinking about it.
But the question, though, how
does it become
Ezra? You should have the
right to listen. But again, so when it, Ezra himself is extraordinarily clear in Kabbalah, he in the Kabbalah, and he says that many, many times. If Chazal is telling us a certain thing because they got it, you know, as the Masorah from Har Sinai, you don't question it, right? And you know, that balance between, you know, intellectual integrity on the one hand and, you know, creativity, but also fidelity to Chazal, the truth is that really is, I think, the role model that we're supposed to, you know, in some way or another, try to, incorporate into our own lives. Okay, I'll pick up over here, as I said. On next week, we'll do it not on Wednesday night, maybe on Thursday night. Is that better for people? Thursday? Wednesday night, I can't be. Maybe we'll learn the Shia next week, as I said, on Thursday night. Again, also following Mincha. Okay?